You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
What are you even worried about? It's Worry Week on The Wire.
Yes, it is Worry Week, and just before that, you heard Sight Beyond the Line by Hex, which is nice to have a little song in there, but now I have Leah Garcia-Purvis in studio, and also Dong Doris, just yelping in the back. But we are talking about smoking 2025 this week on The Wire, essentially the idea that the government wants us to be smoke-free by 2025, and, you know, The Wire can look at that in whichever way they wish. So we've heard a couple of different things the past couple of days. What have we got today, Leah?
So I had a look at how much it actually costs to quit. And cold turkey is a viable option for few. However, considering smoking is an addiction, a lot of people need some intervention. Nicotine patches are generally the first port of call for those wanting to quit. And that's $32 for 7, which is 16-hour patches. So there's 16 hours per patch.
Do you know sort of what amount of nicotine is in there, or does that...
Oh, I'm really, yeah, I just have all the facts up here, but I will have a look.
That's right.
Yeah.
But so somebody that puts on a patch for 16 hours,
yep.
And that you get 7 in a pack, that's basically a week, right?
That's a week,
so that's
yep.
$30 for a week.
Yeah, that's right.
And
I think that's about this. I think the dosage is about the same for the gum as well. So whenever you feel like a cigarette, you can just chew a piece of gum. As far as I know,
okay.
I haven't had them. I've only had the patches, but yeah,
all good.
Yeah. So
keep going.
Yeah. So there's like the patches, and then there's also the prescription of SSRIs, which some doctors prescribe when you get addicted to something. And the first port of call for that is like fluoxetine.
And that's to lessen.
The actual craving for it. So, among other things, it subsides your cravings for anything that might be setting it off. And those take usually up to 2 appointments to prescribe, which is depending on what doctor you go to, it's $40 to $60 per visit, which is. And then you got to pay for the prescription on top of that, which is depending on what pharmacy you go to, it might be $3, it might be $4, something like that. That's funded too. So if you're not from New Zealand and you don't have if you don't have a residency, it costs a little bit more. And then on top of that, usually doctors recommend that you do some sort of counselling. And if that's not referred via the ADHB, usually that's about $150 per session, and they recommend that you do one at least every 2 weeks. So that's $150 per 1 hour session privately. If you don't get referred, it takes 3 months to refer at the least to be referred and called back by the mental health service.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So like if you accumulate all that, that's almost like $3,500 over 6 months. So that's
a lot of money.
Yeah.
And a big commitment.
Yeah.
While you're also
huge.
Dealing with the mental aspects,
yep.
of giving up something.
Yeah, exactly. And so 5% of those smokers still relapse. And a study done in 2014 showed that, I couldn't find any New Zealand stats, but in the UK they lost over $14 billion a year in productivity through like 10-minute smoke breaks. So that's a cost as well that you have to kind of, I mean, nobody should ever be, classified as revenue or productivity through money. So in New Zealand, the rates of being exposed to secondhand smoke were higher for children living in socioeconomically deprived areas, and it's even higher for Māori. So when you look at everything, is it really accessible? Is quitting really accessible? Like, everybody looks at it as like, well, we've got all the facts and figures and we know it's bad, but can we actually do it? And then you look at the social things, like you might have a lot of mates that smoke, and it's all the environment type stuff. So is it really accessible? Are we doing enough to, you know, because $4 for a family living on, say, $500 a week and they've got 3 kids, it's not, you know, it might not be viable. It's just easier to keep smoking, regardless of, you know, the perceived facts.
So this is a good look at the kind of context of what people are facing in terms of choosing to quit to smoke. There's this whole other side of things. I mean, I didn't know any of this, actually, and I didn't realise that. Obviously, yes, like you said, you can go cold turkey, but that's very difficult without certain supports.
Extremely difficult.
And often we don't talk about putting money into these other aspects or creating more support in that side of things. Thank you, Leah. We're going to keep talking about this a little bit. We're just going to go to a break and we'll be back with Lisa's report.
Cool. It's fucked.
Yeah, it is.
The Wire. The Auckland Arts Festival brings you the Festival Playground at Silo Park, a resplendent new space for music, art, food and family fun. March 24th at Festival Playground, A Tribe Called Red, Tiki Tane and Rhea Hall, an unmissable triple bill. Canadian DJ collective A Tribe Called Red blending hip-hop, traditional powwow drumming and vocals with edgy electronica. Dub legend Tiki Tane and free-thinking and unapologetic blazing musical force Rhea Hall. Auckland Arts Festival's Festival Playground, March 8th to the 25th. For information, go to aucklandfestival.co.nz.
こちらは 95BFM オーディブルワールドです。
The Audible World, World Music Treats and Bizarro Ethnomusicological Finds with Andrew McLeod and guests.
僕は人フォリーでなめ、FM ビコントンドルなめ。
Let your ears bathe in all the splendor of the planet's oral delights. The Audible World, every Sunday night from 9 to 11 p.m.
Ascoltate il mondo udibile, Radio 95 BFM.
The Wire.
This week on Wire Worry Week, we focus on smoke-free 2025, the goal set by the government to make Aotearoa New Zealand hell on earth for smokers in 7 years. Yesterday, Leonard walked you through the history of smoking in New Zealand, and today I want to carry on this work with an analysis of campaign advertisements throughout the years. So as explained yesterday, smoking used to not only be widespread, but also, believe it or not, cool in New Zealand. In the first half of the 20th century, the kind of ads you could hear or watch on television sounded a little like this.
I can't seem to find a cigarette I can stay with. This one tastes harsh.
That's easy to fix. Try one of my cools.
Long side.
Mm-hmm. I think you'll like them.
Come up to the cool taste.
Taste extra coolness every time you smoke.
Tobacco manufacturers were targeting various people, for instance housewives, which led to a significant increase in smoking in the female population and therefore prevalence of smoking-related premature deaths. These ads also helped shape the stereotypical and somewhat dangerous definition of what a man is supposed to be. Such advertising was usually broadcasted on television or played at the movies before the film, having a wide reach, hence greatly contributing to the peak in smoking in the early 1960s. By then, half of New Zealand men and a third of New Zealand women were smokers. An increase of scientific research on the link between tobacco use and health issues throughout the 1960s, 70s, and particularly 1980s led to a growing concern for smokers, but also their social circles. Passive smoking was acknowledged, smoke-free environments spreaded, and tobacco advertisement was slowly phased out. Cigarettes advertising was banned from radio and televisions as early as 1963, it disappeared from cinemas and billboards in 1971, and finally was banned from print media in 1990, thanks to the Smoke-Free Environment Act. In the meantime, health promotion and smoke-free lobbying emerged and slowly conquered. And even though New Zealand has one of the lowest rate of cigarette consumption in the OECD countries, and that rate keeps going down, it is still not enough for these advocacy groups. It's hard to find clips online of television campaigns dating back further than 2005, so I'll focus on those I managed to find, which were created by Quitline and the Health Promotion Agency. The first one that I could dig up dates back to 2006, and to be honest, it's a rather lame ad. It's got a very movie-like aesthetic, but I would not be surprised if it did not have any impact.
I wish there was no gravity. And our feet knew no boundaries.
Water,
I wish it rained gold. And we lived in a smoke-free world. But wishes never come true. Or do they?
However, this ad is a good example, I believe, of what does not work to convince people to stop smoking. And I also believe anti-smoking groups have understood that, because later campaigns became more relatable and started targeting specifically afflicted communities. Anti-smoking campaigns can be grouped in various categories. You have the willingly shocking ones. They're very graphic and they don't shy away from showing the damage occurring in your body. Let's have a listen to these Quit Lines ads from 2015 from a campaign called Every Cigarette Is Doing You Damage.
Every cigarette is doing you damage. The cigarette smoke you breathe in thickens your blood and damages your arteries. In time, the damaged arteries become narrowed, reducing the flow of blood to your heart. This can cause a heart attack. Every cigarette is doing you damage.
Obviously, you can't see them, but they are visually gruesome and are pretty much the vocal equivalent of the pictures you can find on cigarette packets today. They heavily draw on people's fear of dying or simply not being healthy. Now, it's hard to tell how effective this is as a smoker. As a smoker myself, I am fully aware of the risk for my health, thanks to this shocking imagery. However, that knowledge has not made me quit yet, and I tend to just hide the picture or try not to look at it for too long when I grab a smoke out of my pack. Anti-smoking groups might have understood that this was not sufficient. They now usually combine the medical aspect with a more personal, relatable story, like the one of Adrian Pilkington, who died from oral cancer shortly after shooting a campaign for Quitline. Relatability seems to be at the heart of campaigns. Families are usually used to show that smoking is a selfish vice that might take you from the family that loves you. There is this 2013 Quitline campaign.
I'm a single mother, and I realised that if I died because of my smoking, who would be there for them? That was the moment I knew I had to quit.
I'd been smoking for 30 years, and one day it hit me. How much it's cost me and my whānau. What a waste.
We buried our mum and sister years before their time, all because they couldn't give up the smokes. That's when I decided I'm going to quit smoking.
Alongside these general ads, campaigners now try to specifically target the population most at risk. Māori and Pacifica communities proportionally smoke more than any other communities in New Zealand. They are extensively featured in ads, some of them even being broadcasted in both English and Māori.
In our home, we do thank yous. We do respect. We do adventure. We do hugs and kisses. We do family. And we are smoke-free. Are you ready to go smoke-free? World Smoke-Free Day. It's all about whānau.
Another group particularly affected by smoking is young people aged 15 to 24, or even younger. Peer pressure plays a major part in New Zealand youth picking up smoking, sometimes from as young as 10 years old. Campaigners have used different strategies to change the minds of impressionable kids. At first, they relied heavily on celebrities to endorse a smoke-free message. Groups used people perceived as cool, role models to a lot of children and teenagers, and got them to say that smoking sucks.
I don't smoke, I don't like smoke, and I don't like being around it. My whare and waka are ōrahi kore because I choose to have it that way.
Smoking is kaka. I don't like it when people smoke around me. Kids not knowing about smokes or smoke or anything. Be me.
A smoke for Aotearoa? It'll be awesome. Smoking, not our future.
Then ads try to blame parents, showing they were setting a bad example for their children and therefore being potentially instrumental in the kids picking up smoking at a young age.
All three of them were smoking.
No, not my son. I told him never to touch any smokes.
So?
So? He'd never disrespect me. Malo! Was it your idea to smoke? Why?
Because he wants to be like you.
But the health promotion agency apparently reached great results with their campaign Stop Before You Start, which launched in 2014. Its ads were definitely targeted at young adults, and the quirky sense of humour seems to have hit a nerve with young Kiwis.
I first started seeing him socially, out with friends and that. He was always around and we'd get together. He was always at parties and hanging out with my flatmates, and now he even comes to work with me. I never dreamed I'd end up with him, but here I am. He says he might give me cancer one day. Yeah. Yep, we're in it for life. Come on.
To be honest, when I first met him, I thought he was a bit of a jerk. He was always getting in my face. He even hooked up with a couple girls I fancied. But after a while, we started spending more time together. Pretty soon, we're always together. He's holding me back on the rugby field a bit. And there's a chance that he might kill me. But what can I do? I'm hooked.
I used to see him occasionally, you know, at the pub with friends or workmates. I only really saw him when I was drinking, and once or twice I snuck out of work to see him. I was a bit down when Isaac dumped me, but this guy. He stops me from buying shoes and stuff, but honestly, I'd rather spend my money on him. I haven't told my mum. She'd freak. Because he killed her sister.
So are these ads really efficient? Well, a study led by the University of Christchurch found that 45% of the people who had watched the ads regretted smoking, and a third said that they stopped smoking around others, and even 28% apparently stopped altogether, which is quite significant. More importantly, the study found that this ad targeting young people had had impact on adults. And then there's been a couple other studies that show that certain specific ads have had effect in specific areas of New Zealand, like one about smoking in the car with children and one with young Māori people in the country. So that's pretty encouraging.
Lisa, you're a smoker yourself.
Yes.
Are you intending on quitting?
Yes. When I started, I told myself that I didn't want to be an adult smoker. So I decided 25 was kind of the limit. Back then, 25 seemed like me being a dinosaur.
How old are you now?
I'm 24.
Okay. Not long to go.
It's actually coming in 6 months, so I'm not feeling too good about this.
Do you have any kind of ways of going about it, do you think?
Well, all the people that I hang out with pretty much are smokers, so we've kind of all decided to stop at the same time, which I believe will be very helpful, because if only one of us stopped, then it would make it that much harder.
Social support, yeah.
Yeah, social support, definitely.
Leah, do you want to add anything?
I totally agree with the social support thing. Like, my best friend lives up north, like 2 hours, and I don't see her that often, but she smokes like a chimney. So whenever I'm with her, I finish off a packet, like, no problem. And it's hard to, like, not do it either. So I'm kind of like, well, if she, yeah.
Okay, we are running out of time.
Yeah.
But Cheers Peter has texted in, which is an exciting moment of the day. And he actually raises the point that I was kind of interested in terms of talking about smoking finishing at 2025.
Yeah.
We have a caller on the line, actually. Let's just go there. Hi, caller.
Caller, let's keep it simple. Kiss a non-smoker. Taste the difference.
All right. Thanks, caller. Bye. Cheers, Peter said that tell the government to butt out with their social engineering. How we choose to live is none of their business. Just smoke and take responsibility for it. Cheers, Peter. More freedom, less government. Now, this is the point that I was kind of raising, right? Is where do we draw the line with the government getting to say what is allowed and what isn't allowed?
I think the line that's being drawn is that if taxpayers, I guess, are going to have to pay for medical bills indirectly, I guess, for people who suffer from complications due to smoking, then, you know, should we not work more on prevention so that people don't have to pay for that? I think that's the main argument, is that one, is that, you know, if you're going to subsidize health, then maybe you shouldn't.
All right.
I think it's their semi-right to ban sort of smoking in public areas because, you know, you're... But in that sense, you kind of stigmatise a lot of people who can't give up. Like I said, you know, it might not be affordable or doable for a lot of people to just give up on the spot. And it becomes... And an addiction is a psychological thing as well. So essentially, I think you're stigmatising mental illness again.
Brilliant. Yeah. All right, we are running out of time, so let's leave it there.
Thanks. Worry Week on The Wire. That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.